Well, folks, how are you getting on? Week before Christmas, are you busy? Are you manic? Are you running around like a headless chicken? Maybe you're not. Do you know what? This Christmas has been... Oh, man, I was about to do, you know, that... I was about to use that phrase that every single advertisement has been using recently. A Christmas like no other. back in the basement in Germany here, myself and Jackie and the wee one, four-month-year-old. I have such a bad habit of saying that. Four-month-old Eliana. We're over in Germany visiting Jackie's family and spending Christmas over here. So another intro from the basement, another episode not from the basement because we recorded this before the last lockdown, just in the nick of time. In our studio in Ormo Baths with the wonderful Greg Bradley. Now, this episode is awesome. It's a good one. I know I'd say all of them are good, but this one is certainly worth your time. Wee bit about Greg. So Greg is the founder and the CEO of Black Box Fitness. Now, if you haven't heard of them, Black Box, they're a company. They specialize in the design, manufacture, and delivery of fitness equipment. So if you've ever been to Pure Gym, and if you ever, you know, mid-set are looking up from your sweaty little eyes, you will see a Black Box logo on their equipment. They make squat racks, they make dumbbells, they make bars, they make plates, you name it, they make it. They make kettlebells, you know, those highly exclusive things in 2020. The unexpected thing that you should have invested in because there was a global shortage due to everyone wanting to work out at home. Now, the Belfast-based team since 2012 have gone on to work with some of the leading sports clubs in the world. This is just one of those great Northern Irish stories of a business that kind of flies below the radar of, you know, general public that are doing just unbelievable things. I wait to hear this. So, you know, some of the gyms I've worked with, Irish Rugby, Arsenal, Google, LinkedIn, the Royals in Dubai, just to name a few. And the great thing is that they operate right there in the Titanic Quarter, right beside the Harland and Wolff Cranes, and they currently employ 70 people. Really enjoyed my time with Greg. Very, very personal guy. Very hungry for knowledge. Really curious. And those are traits I really appreciate in people, and I think they make for really good interviews. And some of the things we talk about today, we obviously talk about early experiences and memories. As part of that, we talk about a head injury that Greg sustained a few years ago. We talk about the leaps of faith that Greg has taken along his business journey, whether it was starting a business while he was still at university instead of getting the usual kind of pub cafe job. We talk a lot about books, actually, including the important books that he's read, the lessons he's learned along the way, and of course, as always, the greatest challenges and successes so far in this entrepreneurial journey that Greg and so many of us find ourselves on. So that's it. Enough from me. Going to jump straight into this episode, starting, as always, with Greg's first memory. Here we go. Yeah, do you have a first memory or an early experience that you don't mind sharing?
Let me think. Right, well, kind of sticks out a little bit.
I mean, you have to hook through quite a lot of data to get there. Do you know what I mean? It's like, out of everything. Like,
yeah, I'm trying to think how far to go back.
How far do you remember? Because that's always interesting to me.
Yeah, so I had a pretty bad head injury and kind of that was maybe, what was that? How many years ago was that? Maybe 7 years ago.
Wow.
So yeah, my memory from before that is, I can remember some stuff, but some stuff is just whether I have a selective memory since that, where I've just erased a lot of things.
That's crazy. How'd you injure your head?
Yeah, fractured my skull and neck. So yeah, I was playing Gaelic football and just collided with a guy that was much bigger and stronger than me. So yeah, I actually struggle to even sometimes pronounce like three syllable words and stuff now.
Serious?
So yeah, which I'm keen to actually maybe try and overcome, because I think it's almost a story sometimes I tell myself. But yeah, so my memory from before that is quite patchy at best. So,
is it the case that, like, you know, as soon as it happened, you can't remember what happened before? Or is there, like, certain pockets of your life where, like, oh, I remember, like, 5 to 10, but I don't remember 10 to 15? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, like, there's some, this sounds stupid, but it's almost like even things I would have learned in school, like history and different things, like, there's some stuff that I'm just not aware of, you know? And, like, I can get by relatively easy with it. I went back and learned some stuff, but some stuff I'm just, like, you know, if I'm in conversation with some people, I'm... For some reason, I just don't seem to know too much about that, which is kind of, I don't mind it. Like, I definitely look back at it and think, you know, I wouldn't say it was a good thing, but I don't think it was, you know, I don't claim to be a victim. I think give me a lot of perspective and even gratitude coming out on the other side of something like that.
So, so, like, how is Greg different before accident versus after accident? As in, like, did you change certain things in your life? Like, so, for example, were you always into reading, or did that come after?
I had just started, it was actually 4-hour work week was...
Oh, serious?
You know, because I wasn't massive academically into reading, and, I think it might be... Are you familiar with Naval Ravikant?
Yeah,
I mean, Naval talks about kind of just read anything until you get into that habit. And, yeah, I think reading 4-Hour Workweek, I know it is a clickbait title, but it definitely, the principles are very sound. Mm. And it was a bit of a paradigm shift for me reading something like that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I just got into reading. I don't read, I don't actually like reading physical books. I know a lot of people do, but I read on my iPad and generally would stretch or, habit stack or multitask. If
maybe give yourself away there. Have you read James Clear's book?
Yes.
Because that's where I came across habit stack.
Habits are definitely. I actually need to go back and reread that. I think I read that in Las Vegas, of all places, when I was lying beside the pool. But maybe need to go back. And
he has this class thing in that book, in Atomic Habits, where he talks about an ice cube, and he says, you know, the difference between an ice cube staying frozen and melting is 1 degree. And that's where he brings in the importance of, like, improving and moving forward at least 1%, you know, every day or every quarter or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big believer in that as well. It's just, like, 1% better every day.
Wow.
Something we try and encourage at Black Box is just, like, just, you know, get momentum, make 1% better, and kind of benefit from the compound effects of that.
Absolutely. So, look, I imagine if you were playing Gaelic, you have been into sports for a long while. When did that start, and what were your kind of early sporting escapades?
I think probably was my earliest memory. I played football or soccer, depending, whatever people call it.
Depends who you're talking to, you know.
Yeah, my older brother was much more gifted than me, and he won like 4 of the kind of local medals, and I was like, okay, I need to try and beat this, but I definitely wasn't as naturally gifted. I kind of played football and then had some trials with some decent teams, didn't really make the cut, and then I think I started surfing randomly and then skateboarding, and then made my way back to Gaelic football, and then the injury happened then, so I actually remember the consultant told me I would never play sport again.
And my goodness.
The second someone tells me I can't do something, I'm just like, I'm going to come and prove you wrong on this.
It's like that Michael Jordan thing, and that's the moment I took it personally, you know?
Yeah. I love the Michael Jordan documentary on Netflix.
It's so good, isn't it?
Yeah, phenomenal.
Like, did you know much about that era of basketball before watching that?
No.
Mate, I didn't know anything about it.
No. Yeah, even Dennis Rodman and stuff. I knew he was a bit crazy, but yeah, the stories are... But it's cool. And even I was reading about... That's the importance of, like, having a good team and good people around you, is that, like, yes, Michael Jordan was amazing, but, like, without some of those other people around him, you know, he wouldn't have been just as good.
Absolutely.
So,
you can aim like Jordan, but you still need Pippen, you know?
Yeah, Pippen definitely is like the man that kind of probably helped him. So, yeah, no, really cool documentary.
Yeah, it would be interesting to like, this is a wee bit BuzzFeed-y, right? But it would be interesting to like almost, you know, like, you know, businesses are and organizations are really into like personality types, and you know, you've got the Enneagram, you've got Myers-Briggs, and you know, these are tools that you can kind of use or discard as you please. Be interesting if you just typed people like, okay, who's the Dennis Rodman in my organization? Who's the Scottie Pippen?
Yeah, that would be an interesting one. So yeah, we've had some interesting results from doing some of those tests, and yeah, ironically, I'm actually maybe a bit of a lot of people think I'm extroverted, but probably a little bit more introverted. So
so the one I'd be most familiar with is Enneagram. Do you know your Enneagram?
Not familiar with that one.
What tests then have you kind of like landed on for your team?
We did the DISC profile thing.
Awesome.
Did that, and I think we did the was it Myers?
Yeah, Myers-Briggs. Yeah,
yeah, done that as well.
So why do you think people assume you're an extrovert?
I don't know, people make assumptions, or even within the company, they maybe see me maybe being a bit more energized than that. But yeah, I personally just like getting my head down and doing things myself. And it's probably a habit I need to try and break, because it's kind of, I've just been used to doing a lot of things myself. And now it's kind of like, well, maybe, you know, we have a good team here, maybe share the load a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're over 70 people now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like, that's huge. Like, that's beyond the remit of what I know in here in Ormo Baths of, you know, the one founder team, the one founder with two staff, you know, even the 10-person team. I can sort of get my head around, but once you get above 10, I'm just like, whoa, that's a different ballgame.
it hasn't actually really totally sunk in, because we've lots of people working different shifts and in different buildings, etc. So we probably haven't had all 70 together at one stage. But yeah, I think, look, we're going to keep continuing, add more team members. And I would say it's challenging from a, you know, I would be probably my own worst critic, and I'm constantly just trying to improve both as a leader. I wouldn't say I'm a great manager per se, but yeah, I do think it's probably, yeah, when it's a small team, it is a little bit easier. And I think we're almost in this kind of, I think there's a book called The Messy Middle, you know, we're not a small company now, and we're not a big company.
Yeah,
we're
kind of,
we still are relatively small in the grander scheme of things, but it's, payroll every month is getting hefty, and we can't have any, you know, back-to-back bad months, because it's quite a risky stage for
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. So, I mean, talk to me about your, you know, origin story, you know, the Batman going down the well and, you know, like seeing the bats. Like, what did you, were you interested in business growing up? Did you always want to start a company? How did Black Box come about?
Yeah, I think if I was to go back even again to my youth or as a child, like both my parents, I feel, were quite pro-entrepreneurial. And a lot of my friends, if I look back, maybe were their parents were forcing them to become doctors or solicitors,
go into the profession, son.
Yeah, and some of those people maybe hasn't totally worked out, whereas my parents, I think, were just quite relaxed and kind of, yeah, just said to me, you know, do whatever you want within reason. So I think, yeah, definitely I would have to sort of say thank you, I guess, to them for giving me that sort of upbringing. And then throughout university, I didn't really work for anyone. I actually used to buy and sell Abercrombie clothing.
Mate, the ultimate side hustle.
Yeah, just bought it in bulk and sold on eBay. And,
class. Because you could make good profit. Like, you can make between 5 and 10 per item of clothing if you played it right.
Yeah.
Remember doing something similar with Hollister stuff? I would go into the sales section and, you know, get a t-shirt for £5 and then sell it on eBay for 15. It's lucrative at that age.
I wanted to go out 4 or 5 nights a week, so I needed to find a way to make it work. So, I think it was, again, a kind of just a cool way to make some money. Yeah.
And did you buy it directly from Abercrombie, or how did that work?
I think I just somehow was buying massive job lots on eBay and then just selling it individually.
Awesome.
I think it was before they had the retail stores and everything. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it was cool, and tried some other things that maybe didn't work. But then I guess the idea for Black Box, and it wasn't actually called Black Box back then.
What was it called?
I cringe. We've actually been through three rebrands.
Yeah.
Initially set the company up and it was called Elite Fitness and Performance. I didn't really know what it was going to be, whether it was like training or selling products or supplements, etc., if there was services. Basically I just put some pictures of like equipment onto adverts.ie, and then like my phone was ringing quite a lot.
Wow.
So the benefit of looking back, it kind of was like a lean startup.
Yeah.
I hadn't read that book then, but a guy, Owen Lacey, who was Conor McGregor's strength conditioning coach, he was like, look, I need this stuff next Sunday. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll get that. And like, had nothing. So, I went to a welder in just outside Coleraine and was like, can you make this stuff? And he was like, have you got engineering drawings? And I was like, what's an engineering drawing? Like, I had no idea. I was like, here's a photo. Can you not just do this?
Yeah.
And somehow he managed to do it. And I wouldn't say it snowballed from there, but that was kind of the first sale in school, because, you know, he's still is a loyal client of ours now.
Brilliant.
And refers a lot of people.
That's class. Yeah, that's kind of like the little kick that you needed to realize, oh, here, this is actually possible. Fair play.
Yeah.
So what was the middle brand?
So, yeah, it went from Elite Fitness and Performance, which was a bit of a tongue twister.
Yeah.
And then for some reason I just thought, when I say studied, I attended university for communication, advertising, marketing. So you think would have come up with a good name, but the next brand was EFB Gyms, which is even worse. But we did start selling sports supplements, which was wasn't exactly what I wanted to do, but I'd met a guy who's quite a high profile sports scientist, and he recommended that, and in theory, you know, he meant well with sort of reoccurring revenue and replenishable items, but it just wasn't really what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I was kind of going against my gut feeling, but back then I was like, well, who am I? You know, this guy's got a lot more experience than me.
Yeah.
So yeah, we thankfully got out of that because there was massive upfront minimum order quantities, cash upfront, and it was coming back months later. So we just pivoted away from that. And then I just went to Belfast Met and was like, look, can you give me your best graduate and can you sell us a welding machine? Because I just felt that we needed to be in Belfast, and I felt that manufacturing would give us a good USB and a good speed advantage. So thankfully they gave us a guy, and we got going. My friend was a technology teacher, and I gave him a couple of tubs of that protein that we're going out of date to do some designs for our first equipment.
Wow.
And there was lots of just wheeling and dealing and contra deals, and that was the currency we were paying people with, was whey protein.
Liquid gold. Although here, I tell you this, like, what I wish, you know, we all, you know, hindsight's 2020, you know, Captain Hindsight, I think Andy Trimble always says. I wish I had invested in loads of kettlebells before lockdown.
I think they say dumbbells are the new toilet roll. Definitely dumbbells and kettlebells were, you know, we could have sold 10 times more if we had them, but unfortunately supply chains coming out of Asia are extremely stretched. All hex dumbbells come out of China. Other countries just can't seem to do them at the right price point and good quality. But yeah, we've actually started working with some foundries in Europe for kettlebells.
Awesome.
And you know, we don't make everything in Belfast.
Sure.
But definitely, you know, even before COVID, I feel creation transparency is hugely important. People want to know where their products are coming from, and it's been an important value for us is that, you know, we don't claim that everything's made in Belfast, but
yeah,
whatever we do, we make it quite clear that it is from here.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, after post-COVID, like, that's just going to be magnified. People want more and more local. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we've made some big enough investments in the past couple of months in our own machinery and manufacturing to help us. You know, I don't think there's too many companies, definitely not in the UK or Europe, with the infrastructure we'll have. So, yeah, it's a bit of a bet, but I'm confident it'll hopefully pay off for us as
That's
well.
That's awesome, man. So, like, kind of going back to, you know, you said that you had this desire to be in Belfast. You wanted to do the manufacturing, you know, like you said, as much as possible or for specific products yourself. Now, you mentioned speed, which is really critical in your industry. But I guess, like, all that aside, I'd love to know, like, why was that important to you? Because, like, the low-hanging fruit here for me is, like, you have now become, Black Box has joined in that very rich, like, industrial heritage off Belfast. You know, you guys are in the Titanic Quarter. You're right beside the Harland and Wolff Cranes. These are where the boats were built. Even, you know, broader out in the city. I remember talking to Oscar Woolley from Suki T.
Yeah.
And he told me a story of, you know, going to, like, a factory in India where they make tea and seeing the machines that said made in Belfast, Sirocco Works. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Mackey's and you've got, you know, all of these amazing kind of industrial giants of the past whose stuff is still around today being used.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know where the question is in that, but why was it important for you to be made in Belfast?
I think just one of my philosophies just in business is kind of, you know, well, some people maybe call it a USP. I just don't want to be on the side of the majority. And I always want to, like, I feel if you want to get ahead or be different, you have to be prepared to do what 95 or 99% of people are not willing to do. And, like, setting up manufacturing is very difficult, especially if I have no clue about engineering or manufacturing, and I still have very little idea about that. But, you know, like Warren Buffett talks about building moats, and for me, it's kind of, we're trying to...
What does that mean? Sorry, I've never come across that before.
Oh, building moats is basically just increasing the barrier to entry. Like, anyone can import from China or import from anywhere or just resell products.
Oh, I like that a lot.
That's, you know, it's easy to do that.
Yeah.
But then what's the difference? You know, what's going to set you apart? Wow. So for us, the manufacturing piece is a massive, it wins us lots of contracts because, like, we do some work with one of the sheikhs, I think he actually owns, like, the most of Dubai, and, like, he's like, his people ring and they're like, we need this stuff by next Tuesday, and we're like, okay, well, there is a premium price for that, and they're like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, no worries, like, here's the check.
Yeah, because we manufacture, we can do that.
Yeah,
wow. We don't do it with everyone, obviously, just gives you a huge amount of control. So I think for me, it's just about doing something different. And if I looked at the landscape in the UK, there's not that many people are manufacturing. But I think it's also it's not just the manufacturing, because I wouldn't even say we're definitely not the best manufacturer of equipment in the world yet. That's where we want to get to. Mm-hmm. But then there's other things that, you know, our product range, the brand, and then even our own staff or team, we're very keen to that they can offer very good service and expertise for people. So when you add all that together, it does make us a little bit unique.
Yeah, because that's the thing. You're not just a supplier of equipment. You also have been involved in some serious, like, end-to-end fit-out projects.
Yeah, no, we've been lucky to, you know, I think we've definitely been able to punch above our weight with some projects. Even securing the Pure Gym contract probably a couple of years ago was a massive one.
That's where I first came across the brand was, what's Black Box? yeah. sitting in Pure Gym, do you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, wow, okay, they're local. Very, very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there was a lot of eyebrows raised when we got that contract. And even Pure Gym, I think, were a little bit nervous. Could we keep up? And it's probably been the opposite. We have been able to.
Wow.
And it's been cool to do that. I think we designed a concept for them. It's about 1500 square foot. It's like a mini functional CrossFit area, and we've probably done almost 200 of those in the past couple of years.
It's incredible.
So it's cool to do something, and we've learned a lot from them in terms of like just operating at scale, and we've raised our game massively. Mm. So, and it has been very good for us, because typically maybe our sales were a little bit lumpy, if you like.
Yeah.
You're always trying to go out and win
feast fast. Yeah.
Whereas with Pure Gym, it was, well, up drip, until drip. COVID, it was quite steady.
Yeah.
This year it hasn't been, but we'll hope that it'll pick up again next month. So.
And did you find that that was offset by the demand for home equipment?
Yeah, thankfully e-commerce was always, I mean, we have a three-pillar strategy this year, and one of the pillars was made in Belfast. The other one is e-commerce, and the other one is, we talk about 60-40. We want to grow by about 60% each year.
Mm.
Try and achieve 40% margin. We don't always hit that. Mm-hmm. But e-commerce, even before COVID, was going to be massive focus for us. We'd hired a e-commerce manager, and he's now claiming that he's helped increase our sales by almost 1,000%.
And you're like, okay, so, we're at the quarterly review or the annual review. You're technically right, but there was a couple of other little circumstances that came into play.
Yeah, and then it makes the target for next year an interesting one. So,
all I want you to do is just maintain what you've done. You're like, oh, he's like, whoa, hold on a second.
He'll give you all this credit this year, but it just means next year we're expecting something similar. Yeah. So, even switching for us, like typically before COVID, e-commerce was maybe 10-15% of our revenue, and it switched to almost 90%. And
incredible.
Just even things like the amount of tickets you're getting, inbound inquiries on Instagram, different mediums. Everyone was just in the warehouse giving a hand, manufacturing, packing orders and stuff. But 100%, there was a stage in March where we thought we might have to close, go down the redundancy route. You know, it was pretty stressful time for everyone, but we have definitely been fortunate that we've been able to continue to trade. I think we've hired about 25 or 30 this year, and even hiring people during a pandemic.
Can you imagine?
Been a fun one,
but as a fan and a reader of people like Warren Buffett, like how many companies were built during recessions?
I was actually speaking to someone that yesterday. It's like, this is the best time to be starting businesses. There's cheaper rents, there's probably more choice for recruiting people. Mm-hmm. I'm a massive fan of bootstrapping and still maintain. We've done some work with Nike previously and been over to their HQ, and like, there's a massive company, but they go on like a scrappy little startup. That's cool. I think if you've got massive budgets and layers of people and managers and stuff, I think that just removes any creativity. And so I'm a big fan of constraints as well. There's a cool book, I think it's called Beautiful Constraints. I'll double check the exact title, but it's cool. And it's just switching that, you know, normally people complain about constraints, about, you know, I've no budget or I've no time or et cetera. And just switching that to actually a constraint's actually an advantage.
Yeah. Have you ever read Essentialism?
Yes, Greg McKeown.
I love that book. Like, he talks a lot about, you know, the importance of having constraints and the awareness of trade-offs and stuff. It's one of my favorite books ever. But I really buy into that. A lot of decisions I've made in my own life, I kind of like ascribe to like a deep, not wide philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, instead of trying to cast like the really wide net, it's like getting laser focused and, you know, really trying to move towards that one thing.
Yeah, I do struggle with a little bit of focus, probably spin about 10 plates at one time. But I think I maybe do need to reread that book. So, yeah, thank you for the prompt, Matthew. Thank you.
No, the beautiful constraints is something that I want to check out, because the idea of and the concept of bootstrapping, I think, is really, really critical. Because I think, you know, a lot of people listening who are sitting on a business idea, one of the big hurdles, one of the moats as such, is, oh no, but I need to raise, you know, 50 grand and I need to do this, I need to do that, I need to quit my job. And you're like, nah, like you could just start now. Yeah. Now, granted, you can't do that with 100% of businesses, but you could do it with most.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think touching on 4-hour work week, the amount of people I know that have transitioned from maybe having a full-time job to starting something, and that book has maybe been a catalyst in that.
Yeah.
I think especially if you're young and maybe don't have family or children and stuff, you can't take that risk. Why would you not take the risk? I was in a lucky position that, you know, I was, I think, 23 and had nothing to lose. I was unemployable. I wasn't willing to fill in an application form. I was too lazy. Well, just wasn't scratching my itch. But I'm very pro-entrepreneurial, and I think a lot of people, it's controlling their own mindset and having the beliefs that they can do something. But it's not for everyone, and that's fine. But it's, you know, I think if you are going to do it, just, I feel you have to go all in. It doesn't mean you have to quit your job, but like you do have to, you know, you're going to have to burn candle at both ends if you're going to keep a job. But yeah, I think just when people kind of hedge their bets and are like, yeah, I'm not 100% sure, or I'm not really trying, it's like, come on. You know, yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
That's awesome. I loved some of the quotes that you sent through, and this idea, you know, the paraphrase of one of them, but who you will be in 5 years depends on the books you read and the individuals you spend the most time with.
Yeah, that's from a guy, Charlie Tremendous Jones. And yeah, I'm a huge believer in it, even if you were to just separate the books piece or the people. Like, both those two things, I feel, have had a massive impact on me. And even, like, it sounds a bit ruthless, but like there's some people that I would have been friendly with or even growing up with, and sometimes you do have to maybe limit your time with them. You know, I used to drink, you know, at uni 4 or 5 nights a week and drink at the weekend and stuff, and then I just asked the question, like, is this actually going to bring me any closer to where I want to be? You know, I still do drink wine at the weekend and stuff, but I don't spend my time in a pub all the time. So yeah, I'm massive, and sometimes even, again, it sounds ruthless, but some family members, etc. Thankfully I've been blessed, but I have heard of some other family story can put limiting beliefs on people. But yeah, the books is massive. I feel that, you know, some books for less than £10, you can get like hundreds, if not thousands of pounds.
Absolutely.
Value. I think that's probably my biggest asset is actually my Kindle. I think I've got probably 500 or 600 books in there. And if the house was burning down, I'd be on for that. So even though it's probably backed off.
I know, that's the thing. It's like, it's in the cloud, but you know, it's that specific Kindle has been imbued with all those years of reading in it. You know, it's a special artifact. Red or white wine?
Red.
You like red? A specific type?
I'm hoping to get married in Italy next year.
Oh, nice.
Chianti, I think, or I'm probably not pronouncing it correct, but it's okay. On a vineyard. So.
We're in Belfast, we'll let you get away with it.
What's that, sorry?
I said we're in Belfast, we'll let you get away with it.
But yeah, pronunciation's probably not the best, but yeah, no, I'm a red fan. Do you drink?
I really like red wine.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of white. I would cook with white.
Okay.
I've been trying to like get more into cooking recently, so the wine has been more of like an ingredient rather than a drink, but I love a glass of red wine on Friday night. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's funny, everything that probably didn't like when
younger.
Yeah, I do. Olives? What are you talking about?
Yeah, I go to St. George's Market every weekend for olives and would never have at them ever. So,
class.
Yeah, taste buds are evolving.
Ah, that's it. That's it. I'd love to. I've got a little bit of a few stories. And if you want to pass on any of these, like, just say pass. Mm-hmm. And they're more just prompts because I think I am curious about the longer story. So this first one, forklift, 3 a.m., Dubai.
Okay. Don't know who you've been talking to, but I think we were doing an install in Dubai. It was in the first floor, like the world's biggest Lamborghini showroom. I think any install, if you see me there, it's probably not a good sign because it'll just show how under pressure we are because you just don't want me being there. I was actually asked that question quite recently, what our most difficult or challenging install was. That one in Dubai was a challenge, but there's been others and there's been tears. We have made quite a lot of mess ups over the years, and generally, like, we talk internally about this win then worry, and it's kind of like win the business and then we'll worry about it. A couple of times we have been caught out. There was one gym box in London that we had like a bank holiday weekend basically to completely redo a gym and remove all the old stuff and then put a new kit in, and like our guys worked like 72 hours without sleeping and stuff, and we didn't even get it complete in time, and yeah, that was pretty bad. But thankfully, I think if you just own up and do your mistakes and right any wrongs, generally most of the time people will be forgiven. But yeah, that's definitely the worst one. We don't actually talk about it within black box because it's like
you've put it in a black box. You're like, we're not opening this anymore.
don't talk about it.
Why black box? Why the name?
So that was the third rebrand, I guess. Didn't complete that story. Sorry, I get a bit sidetracked.
It's my job to be sidetracked.
I think it was 2015, and we were actually on the Invest NIE design program to do the rebrand.
Awesome.
And the agency understood the brief, and I feel definitely got the brief, but just names is very hard.
Because it's one thing coming up with a name, it's coming up with a name that's available is the real kicker.
Yeah, definitely. It's so challenging. And then even just names are important, and if you have a good brand, it's a massive asset, but then it's also the story that goes with it. Yeah, it makes
the brand. It's like the catch 22, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, they unfortunately couldn't come up with the a suitable name, and then I was coming out of established in Hill Street, highly caffeinated, and drove past Black Box, the kind of music venue.
Yeah.
And I was like, I kind of like that name. Yeah. So I texted to Miles from our team, and he always tries to be a little bit contrarian with any of my ideas.
The devil's advocate.
Yeah, it took like a couple of letters out of it, but he did, in fairness, to give credit, came up with like the box mark and stuff like that. So we basically just did it internally.
Brilliant.
And I remember putting it up on Facebook once we were doing this, and I was like really nervous because I just didn't know how it was going to go down. And then like people, were really receptive, saying they loved it. And even for first couple of years, like the amount of people were like, love the brand and stuff. And I didn't believe them. I still don't, but I've heard it quite a bit now where I'm kind of like, okay, well, yeah, sometimes people do like it. So that was how we did the rebrand.
Mate, that's awesome. German beer drinking contest.
Oh. I think that was from the gym box guys, actually. So we were at FIBO. I think that's been my approach, aside from this story, is just like relationship building. Like, we like to have a bit of fun, you know.
Absolutely.
Like, we don't just eat chicken and broccoli and like macros and all this. But yeah, we were at FIBO, which is the biggest sort of fitness expo in the world, and Gymbox is, they have about 10 or 11 gyms in London, quite high end, and they're kind of cutting edge. Well, cutting edge isn't the right word. They're quite edgy and contrarian. But yeah, really cool gym. And we were out with the MD and the founder.
Brilliant.
And the rigs they buy from us are like maybe 30 grand. And the guy had a massive 2-pint stein.
The stein.
If you down that in one, we'll give you the rig for free. But then if you don't, you're paying twice as much.
Oh, my goodness.
So he downed. I have the video of it. It's hilarious. And he like gets to the very, very bottom.
No, he doesn't.
But he just can't get the last bit in. And then like the founder guy, he's all excited. And then he doesn't do it. And he's raging. And then we go outside and he's sick all over my shoes.
But yeah. That's like a classic little like almost like inside knowledge bit. Because it's something like I remember like, you know, like various like youth stuff, you know, in the summers as like a boy, like they would always try to get people to, what was it, like down 2 liters of milk.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's actually physically impossible. Like your body, number one, can't handle that much liquid in that short space of time. Yeah. But then also something to do with just like the fat in the milk. So it's almost like, mate, I don't even know if it's possible. And then you see the guy in the corner in the beer hall in Germany and he's like, he does it 3 times in a row and you're like, okay, never mind.
Got skills. But I think the Gymbox guys, even that's someone that I chased for years to try and get in, and like just cold outbound emails, nothing. And then I was actually working in Bali for a month remotely a couple of Christmases ago.
That's very 4-hour work week of you.
Yeah, just always wanted to go into yoga, and just had a couple of projects I wanted to complete.
Brilliant.
And yeah, just decided to go, and I was reading an article with the guy from Gymbox, and there was like some quote from it about the Gymbox army, so I just put that as the subject line and was like, can we join the Gymbox army?
Love
and then
it.
Just referenced some of our work, and he was like, come meet me in a couple of weeks, and went from there. So
killer.
I mean, I think that's one thing that, you know, yes, some people are maybe against doing outbound and cold calling and stuff. I feel you still have to
absolutely
go out there and be absolutely aggressive to try and win business as well. So
that's cool.
I still do it, and not as much as I used to, but I still think it's important.
Totally. Last prompt. 24-hour trips to China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we spent a lot of time in China. I'm actually a wee bit annoyed that we can't go back there. Just it's a mind expanding country, and not actually overly happy with the whole COVID thing, but we'll just put that to the side.
That's another podcast.
But even for us, we learn a lot going there and just seeing, you know, how resourceful those guys are. You could go into a factory and there's, you know, not that many staff working there, but the output is massive. I think this particular trip, it just, all I could say, the trips we go to China, it's like a stag do. Because, like, honestly, it's, and the wine they have, the Chinese wine, in case you ever go, it's not the same percentage of wine.
It's not sake, is it? Is that Japanese?
It is Japanese. Theirs is called, I can't remember the exact name, it comes in a yellow bottle, but it's about 50%.
Is it made with rice?
I think it is, yeah.
It's
like the tables spin round and like they won't let you have an empty glass, so it's beer but you're doing like maybe 7 nights on the trot, and you've launched as well. So it's,
and you're jet-lagged.
And jet-lagged. We actually got confirmation that we got the Pure Gym contract when we were in China. And like,
brilliant.
We had put so much work into getting this.
I bet.
And me and Miles were in a taxi, and we just got word. And then we just looked at each other, and we're like, well done. And that was it. It was kind of like, we didn't even celebrate it. It was like, I think that's one thing we're just always like, it's maybe not the best trait, but it's just like, what's next, you know? I think there is a danger if you're always just patting yourself in the back and telling yourself how good you are.
Yeah, well, like, it's one thing for an organization to always be hungry. You know, I think you could make a really compelling argument that that's the job of the business, is to always, you know, healthy things grow, all that kind of philosophy. Where you probably run into difficulty is, like, in your personal life. Like, if you have that attitude for you as an individual. So how do you walk the road between being ambitious and being content?
Yeah, it's something, to be honest, I constantly live, there's a guy, Dan Sullivan, he talks about the gap, and it's like where you're constantly just living and like, what's next? And it is an exercise I occasionally do, is like, stop and just look back at what you've done, because if you're constantly just living in that hamster wheel, you know, it's probably not the most enjoyable thing to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's probably one of my many flaws, is that I don't give praise that well. I think people know it's like, no news is good news type thing. I don't know, it must be some sort of subconscious thing from my childhood or something, where
you know,
I just,
what most of these things usually are.
it's I do meditate, and I've probably bought more gratitude journals than the most, and I do believe in all of that helps, but I don't know. Work is a massive part of my life, and will continue to be. I'm in a blessed position that it's a very cool industry to be in.
Totally.
I want to, long may it continue.
That's great. Awesome. Moving it into now, kind of like, there's always five stock questions I always end the interviews with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, it's the staple of the show. So it's kind of like the loose format is, okay, start with the first memory, see where it goes, and then end with these, because these are the questions that I asked from episode zero, you know. So the first one being, out of everything so far, what has been the most challenging moment, and how are we able to overcome it?
I've had lots of setbacks and paid more stupid tax, I think, than most.
Stupid tax, brilliant.
I think having the mindset of, like, you know, had a shitload of setbacks over the past few years, but you have to almost change your mindset and be willing and almost embrace mistakes. After I had that injury, I naively kind of invited two friends, so there was three of us in the business. They were brothers, and it was a three-way split. Shareholder agreement.
Brother.
And this went on for years, and emotionally exhausting, quite expensive. But the money wasn't even a big thing for me, it was just a lost time and
absolutely
distress from it. So overcoming that was massive. Getting out on the other side of it, you know, and it taught me a lot. I definitely was very just sales and marketing back then, and maybe weren't aware of some of the other more important things. So I'd say, that has been a challenge, and we're still very much bootstrapped in terms of haven't brought any external investment in, everything's done through debt. But again, I feel that gives us just a bit more control. I'd say that's probably been the, there's probably a podcast in that alone, but we'll not get into.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. I even appreciate you sharing that much. I think it's a part of business that people, you know, it's protecting the downside, but you never know what the downside is until you experience it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, it wasn't an enjoyable one, but again, like the injury I had, I look back and I'm glad it happened, because especially when it did, it just taught me so much more, both in business and even personally. And it definitely has made me a much better all-rounder and gave me a lot of perspective. So, but it was a stressful time.
I bet, this is just an off-the-cuff one, and it's probably the hardest question I'll ask you today. If you could only recommend one book, what would it be?
Hmm. That is a tough one.
So because this is an audio show, I'm going to do an audio visual thing. Greg is squirming in his chair. He is flabbergasted and does not know how to respond.
I always try to ask, because then it's like, is it for someone that wants to start a business or running a business? But
go Desert Island Disc Mode if you can only bring one book with you to read the rest of your life.
One book. I do like Magic of Thinking Big, which I know Tim Ferriss is a fan of.
Who is that? I can't remember. I've heard it referenced loads.
Yeah.
I haven't read it. I read it over Christmas.
Quite an old book, but I think that Shoe Dog I am a big fan of as well.
The Phil Knight Nike story?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's a slow burner to get going, but yeah, then once you get into it, it's a fascinating read, so it is.
I have it on Audible. It's one of my holiday listens that I've lined up. Can't wait.
Yeah, Audible version's very good as well.
Is it good?
Yeah, I think that they're good books. And then if someone is in business, you know, I am a big fan of Vern Harnish's Scaling Up or Gino's Traction books. I think they're quite good operating systems if you're running a business. And I remember reading those a couple of years ago, and they're almost like that good that you don't want to tell anyone about them.
Yeah.
So I think they are good, because it's kind of like they're a book that you read and then you're like, fuck, oh, if only I knew this 5 years ago. But I think I am a massive fan of books, and I don't think there is a danger of reading too many books, but sometimes you can read especially different philosophies or different operating systems. When you're in business, you have to pick one because, you know, we're doing different Invest NI leadership things and then Traction and then some other things. And you can get a little bit
too much sauce.
Definitely. So it's going back to probably essentialism, that less is more.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Most successful moment so far?
I think the Adidas, winning the Adidas contract was probably a big one, just because it was Adidas.
I used to love wearing them as a wee boy, so I did.
It was just cool even getting over to their headquarters. And I remember we were dealing with the guy, and when we told him that, like, I was the founder or owner of Black Box, he near fell off his chair. He was like, you're like Adi Dassler or the founder. That was cool, but that's external. I do think, like, I don't know, one thing I do enjoy is just even giving people a chance. You know, we have quite a, and we don't just employ young people, like, we have people of all ages, but it's kind of, seeing that's probably one of the more enjoyable things, is like taking a chance on people and then seeing them develop, you know, both professionally and personally, is quite rewarding to do that. And that's the big thing that we're wanting, is like, we don't want people coming here to just work 9 to 5. It's like, we want people that are mini business owners and wanting to make an impact. So I think that's cool. You know, culture is massively important, and, you know, if we can protect that as a company, you know, quietly confident that we should be okay over the next couple of years, touch wood.
Totally did. If you could take anyone from Northern Ireland out for a coffee or a pint, dead or alive, who would you take, where would you take them, and why?
I think James Leckie, have you interviewed James? Have you?
I have interviewed James.
Yeah.
What a remarkable guy.
Yeah, I know. James is cool. I haven't actually had a chance to have a beer with him, but it is on my list. He's a great storyteller. And I mean, I was in James's headquarters. He's actually sold the company, I think, quite recently, but just seeing how his brain works from a, like, he is a master technician, of, like, he was making these really cool face masks, but he set up this production line and we were working in it, but, like, that's something that I just could never do. But he just, yeah, he seems like a cool guy that would have a good story or two to tell.
Also a really fellow avid book lover.
Yeah, he's
really into it.
Yeah, he's a big Traction fan as well.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I just read him, or I just ring him out of the blue, and like he always takes my call for some reason. And if someone rings me out of the blue, I wouldn't always answer a call, yeah, just through being busy. But yeah, he's been a cool guy. Trying to think who else would be a good one. Obviously, yesterday was George Best's anniversary. I'm sure he would have plenty of stories to tell. But yeah, as you say, as we were chatting to offline, there's so many people in Northern Ireland that have done amazing things.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think it's very important to sort of keep paying it forward and having time for other people as well. I've benefited from, you know, loads of people give me time and expertise, and it's something that I'm always keen to try and keep continuing to do. But look, I'm nowhere near the level of those people, but you know, I think even sometimes it's quite beneficial, because you know, sometimes if you're just starting out, there's no real point speaking to someone that's running a massive company.
That's it.
A bit more tangible.
Yeah.
I think it's always important. So yeah, no, we'll try and tee up James Leggy, I think.
Yeah, get a pint with James. Why not?
Yeah.
Great
guy. I think it could be probably turn into a 2-day thing or something.
Look, this is super random, again, off the cuff. Like, I'm interested in, like, I'm not really a sports guy. Like, it's never really been my thing. I am interested in how things change, though. And I'm really, from an outside perspective, I'm really curious about how, like different sports change. So like the difference between football and George Best's day to football now is just like astronomical.
Yeah.
Do you think George Best would have lifted weights?
Can't imagine him.
Yeah.
Or,
you know, it seemed to be just a very different stage of the game.
Yeah. I think those guys are outliers though. I think the age we're living in now, like, I think it would be quite dangerous for any athlete to think that they shouldn't go to the gym.
Yeah.
I feel it's not the most important thing, but I feel it's a very important part, even just from an injury prevention perspective. And even if you look at cycling, and I know it's had challenges with performance enhancement drugs and whatnot, but like up until not that long ago, even going to the gym was frowned upon, but now it's a massive part. And that's probably the most exciting thing about this industry. You know, like I meet people and they'd be like, oh, you could have a massive exit and, you know, like build this thing up and sell it and everything. And like, or sometimes you're like, yeah, I could do that. And then sometimes you're like, well, why, what would I do? You know?
Yeah.
I'm in such a lucky position that like, and I love doing it for small business owners, helping them open their first gym, or like just dealing with either high profile athletes, teams, business people, etc. It's kind of like, what else would you do? And I feel we're only scratching the surface. Like I think, 15% of people go to a gym? And look, the gym, I don't even really like going to the gym. I love exercise.
Just
find something.
Yeah.
But like, do anything as opposed to, you know, sitting and doing nothing. So don't know if I even answered your question.
Mate, I can't even remember the question. That's how far down we are. No, it's awesome stuff. Like it is. I agree with you. Like, you know, more and more athletes have and will continue lifting weights. You know, it has to be part of the strategy going forward. So
yeah.
It's interesting. Favorite takeaway in Northern Ireland?
Think Bowtry Thai, or is it in Holy Lands? It's pretty good. Yeah, I haven't actually totally got into the takeaway, doing the high end takeaways at home. I'm just like, I'd rather wait until they open again. So yeah, I think Thai food's pretty good.
Awesome.
And there's a taco van. I live in the Obel Tower, Taquitos, I think it's
called.
So it's pretty handy. So
that's awesome.
I don't venture too much into South Belfast or other areas in Belfast probably should, but yeah, I once bought a Vespa scooter to do that, but I didn't end up using it too much.
Brilliant. Favourite place to get ice cream in Northern Ireland?
There's a place in Newry, I think, called Timoney's.
That's right.
And then there's one similar closer to where my parents live called Usher's, I believe.
Oh, I've never heard of Usher's. Tell me more.
It's similar, that kind of soft.
Yeah.
Kind of ice cream. I'm trying to think what else. Gelato's pretty good. I think there's a couple of places in the Ormo Road.
Yeah. Al Gelato, yeah. Where's Usher's?
Usher's is, it's in a little hamlet called Garva.
Brilliant.
Outside Coleraine. I actually don't even know if it's still
operating.
Yeah, it's a pretty old school place.
I love it.
Many tractors and things like that.
Class.
But yeah, probably one of those two would be up there.
Brilliant, mate. Final question, a question we always end on, and it's the classic. If you could jump in a time machine and spend a few minutes with 18-year-old Greg, you had a few minutes of his time, and you could tell him any piece of advice, you could say anything to him, what would it be?
It's a good question. I do think that Charlie Tremendous Jones, I think, yeah, that quote of kind of, you'll be the sum of the five people you spend most of your time with, you'll be in 5 years' time the sum of the people you spend most of your time with or the books you read. I think, yeah, sometimes people underestimate it. They think, you know, what's that even mean, or what's that going to do? What difference is it going to make? I would probably just say that to myself, because I think it has definitely had a massive impact for me. Even just like money doesn't bring happiness. Money does make life easier, but I feel if you can find something, we're all on this planet for a very, very short period of time. And I know this year seems maybe like a couple of years long, but I feel that, you know, life definitely is too short. Like, I don't believe in holding grudges. Life's, you know, too short to do that. And whatever you're doing, just do something that you enjoy. I do think you don't have to do something you're totally passionate about. I feel if you can and get paid for it, you're in a very privileged position. But if you're really good at something and it fulfills you, you know, by all means, because I think if everyone's trying to find something that, you know, is their passion, sometimes you might struggle to get paid for that. If you can, it's great. Mm-hmm. So, I think that would be probably the advice I would give.
That's great.
Stay out of the pub. Don't drink so much.
Greg, mate, that was an absolute pleasure. Really, really appreciate you coming down to Ormo Bass to do this just before the next wave of lockdown, and for sharing everything you did. Honestly, I thought it was unreal, and class. Appreciate you.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for having me, Matthew. It's an honour. So, yeah, happy Christmas.
So, yeah, lovely stuff. I wish you could see me. I'm currently sitting cross-legged on the ground on a cold tiles in the German basement of my wife's parents. Surrounded by, it's kind of like what our version of a shed would be, I suppose. Although, funnily enough, in saying that, there is actually a squat rack right beside me. Unfortunately, not a black box one, because my German, what are they to me, brother-in-laws didn't know about the company at the time, otherwise they totally would have gone for it. A little bit appropriate. I just wanted to jump in and just say thank you so much for listening to this episode. Really appreciate your time. Really appreciate you spending it with us, with myself and Greg. And look, there's over 170 episodes just like this one. We exist to celebrate Northern Ireland. We exist to share inspiring and positive stories of just the great stuff that people from this part of the world are doing. And frankly, to kind of get a bit of a spotlight going of the fact that Northern Ireland has a lot of opportunities, the fact that Northern Ireland has a lot of good things going for it, contrary to what maybe your local newspaper will tell you or your local radio station or whatever, it makes me sound a wee bit kind of like alt-media, which I guess in some ways we are. We focus on the positive, we focus on celebrating. And if you enjoyed today's episode and it's your first time listening, I would really, really love to invite you to check out another episode. Literally, there's hundreds of them with some really notable people from Northern Ireland, whether they are famous and well-known, to complete hidden gems that you definitely have never heard of, but whose story I think that you would really, really love to enjoy and love to hear. So you can head to bestofbelfast.org for all of that. You can listen on your favorite podcast platform. If you want to reach out and say hello, my email is matthew@bestofbelfast.org. And other than that, I would just love to say happy Christmas. Greg beat me to it. He's very, very forward thinking there. And look, it's been an unbelievable year for the podcast. I'm not going to get too sentimental because I have a tendency to, really romanticize and turn things into like a big presidential speech. Maybe not presidential, probably more like an Oscar winning speech. And if you're like, and I would just like to thank, and then you go off and you list and you name. But in all seriousness, this year has been huge for us. I wholeheartedly just want to thank, I'm doing it. I'd love to thank all of the I think about over 100 guests we've had on the show this year. Granted, we did do a 50-day sprint during the first lockdown. We did an interview every single day, which doubled our numbers for the year unexpectedly. But I really, everyone who's come on the show to share their story this year, I really, really appreciate it. I appreciate your vulnerability. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your honesty. But more importantly, I really appreciate and want to thank you guys for listening. What is a podcast without someone to listen to it? And so whether you've just checked out one or two or whether you've listened to every single episode, thank you so much for being a part of this story. Thanks so much for being a part of this journey. And of course, I'd love to give an extra special thank you to all the members in our Producers Club for supporting the podcast financially. We literally couldn't do what we do without you. And that goes for our local business partners as well, who very generously support us. That's it. That's all I'm going to say. There has been a lot of big changes in the works, and I'll kind of leave that little bit of clickbait with you. To be honest, the last kind of 4 weeks of my life have completely rocked my world, and it has given me a whole new perspective for the future of the podcast, which I would love to share with you at another point. I would just like to put a little mark in the book, a little bookmark in at this stage of the journey, just to take the opportunity to say thank you, say happy Christmas, and to say I hope you have a wonderful time off. I hope you have a wonderful time with people, whatever that looks like this year, although it may be different. And I'm really, really excited to share a new year with you. We will be doing a couple of mental health focused episodes, first 2 weeks of January. Some brilliant, brilliant conversations around all that I can't wait to share with you. And that's it. I said I wouldn't ramble, but here we are. So I will just end by saying thanks again. Really appreciate you. Have a great rest of your day, whatever you get up to. And Merry Christmas.
Hi, I'm Rebecca, creative at Lines and Current, an online jewellery and accessories brand. And I live in East Belfast with my husband, John, who also works on our business with me, and our three kids. I like listening to the Best of Belfast podcast because I really love to hear the nitty gritty stuff that comes with those types of unfiltered conversations that Matt has with his local guests. I'd say my favourite episode was probably that one with Grace Chambers, the 91-year-old parkrun record holder. I think for us, we really like what Matt is doing and we've loved supporting what he's doing. He seems to just be shining a light on the Northern Irish people, community, and exposing all those untold stories. So yeah, if you've been on the fence about joining the Producers Club and you'd miss Best of Belfast if it wasn't there, I recommend you consider joining today. You can do so over at bestofbelfast.org, and I look forward to seeing you in the WhatsApp group soon.